Okay, our discussion now turns to prima facie duties. Now, as we said before, what Ross wants to do here is find a way to understand how these basic duties that we seem to have can be reconciled with the obvious fact that there are consequences to these actions as well. And he says, you know, we stand in this relation of, he's talking about the promise example, we stand in this relation to somebody we've promised something to, and this is morally significant. He says, when I'm in this sort of situation, as perhaps I always am, in which more than one of these prima facie duties is incumbent upon me, what I have to do is to study the situation as fully as I can until I form a considered opinion, it's never more than that, then the circumstances, one of them is more incumbent upon me. So, what is this prima facie duty? Now, first off, this is sort of interesting because the first thing he does here is apologize for using this term, prima facie duty. This must be apologized for, he says. So this prima facie duty or conditional duty is a brief way of referring to the characteristic which an act has in virtue of being a certain kind. now, so it's sort of interesting that he gives us this phrase, this word, or this term rather, and he then apologizes for it for a couple of reasons. Now, he seems to say that he can't think of another name for it, but he kind of just did in the previous paragraphs, his prima facie duty or conditional duty. Why don't you just call it a conditional duty? I don't really know why, but he doesn't. He sticks with the name prima facie, and then he apologizes for it. Now, I don't know if you've heard that phrase prima facie before, but it is used oftentimes, not just in ethics, not just in discussions of morality and Ross and things like that. It's used to mean, well, quite literally it means at first glance, or on the face of it. So somebody might say something like, I mean, somebody gives you an argument, right? Somebody proposes an argument to you and you say, well, prima facie, that looks like a good argument, but I will have to examine it further. I will have to think about it more deeply and examine it further before I, you know, commit. In other words, at first glance, it seems good, but I want to make sure by delving a little bit deeper. So he says, well, you know, we want to apologize for this phrase when we're applying it to duty because, one, he says, it suggests that what we're speaking of is a certain kind of duty where it's not a duty. That's interesting. It's called a prima facie duty, but he's saying it's not actually a duty. We'll see why that is in a minute. But then he also says, number two, prima facie suggests that we're speaking of an appearance of duty, right? Prima facie, your argument seems good. It means there's this appearance of the argument being good, but that doesn't really mean that it actually is a good argument. So prima facie suggests that there is just an appearance of a moral situation, when in fact, I want to say that there is an objective fact here. It's not illusory. There is an objective fact that we're dealing with a moral situation here. So this phrase, prima facie, is perhaps not the best one. But he's going to use it anyway. I mean, instead of changing to conditional duty or whatever, he's going to use prima facie duty anyway. So we just sort of have to understand what exactly that means. So if we move down a bit, he says there's nothing arbitrary about these things. These are duties that rest on a definite circumstance which cannot seriously be held to be without moral significance. And then he suggests this definition. Now, I want to note here, he says, I'm not claiming completeness or finality of this division. So we've sort of run into this before, you know, when we're talking about the philosophy of calculus or something. There's a question I asked when we were talking about the philosophy of calculus. Is there anything on this list that doesn't belong? Is there something not on the list that does belong? Remember, there are those seven different aspects, seven different parts of the philosophy of calculus that we should consider. And we had to consider whether or not these things are all appropriate or whether there are any things that are missing from that list. Well, we're going to ask the same question here. But this time we even have Ross suggesting, sorry, that's my chair, my chair squeaking. Ross himself is suggesting that maybe, you know, maybe this is an incomplete list. Maybe it's not final. Maybe there are things that I've forgotten. Maybe there are things that I'm missing. But even so, let's consider these different aspects. So now he divides these prima facie duties. We can list these prima facie duties as he suggests here. Some duties, he says, are things that rest or rely on previous acts of my own. There are two of these kinds of duties. There is the promise, right, that we have already been talking about, or even an implicit promise. So, you know, there's this promise that one makes, and of course the simple act of making a promise means that there is some sort of moral weight there to the keeping of that promise. But then there are also, as he says, implicit promises, you know, just entering into conversation with somebody or writing a supposedly nonfiction book and so on. There's this implicit understanding that you're not supposed to be lying, right? So making a promise, even if it's an implicit one, there's this underlying duty that he calls duty to fidelity, which essentially means be truthful, be honest, right? That's what essentially what fidelity means. So there are these actions that I undertake, right? And in my actions, I should endeavor to be, I have this duty, this prima facie duty to fidelity. And then, of course, there's this other group that rest on my own previous actions. If I have done something wrong to somebody, if I have wronged someone else, then I have this duty, this prima facie duty, as he calls, of reparation. I have there's moral weight to my making up for that wrongful act, to make amends, to make reparations for that wrongful act. That's also part of my prima facie duty. So we can divide these two, or this number one here, into these two different categories. There's the duty to fidelity, and there's the duty to reparation. But then we have duties that are based on or rest on acts of others. So if others have helped me out, if others have done rights to me, if have given me special consideration or have done something to help me out, then there is a moral duty, he says here, a prima facie duty to gratitude. In other words, there is some sort of moral weight to me showing gratitude by, I don't know, perhaps paying back or whatever it is that I should do or can do to show gratitude or be grateful for the other things that someone has done for me. Now, that's an interesting one that I'd like you to think about. We're going to think about all of these in turn, really, but this gratitude one is an interesting one. And so while we're going through this and in our discussion of these sorts of things, think about that for a moment. Is there really an underlying duty? A prima facie duty, and of course we'll explain what that means in a little more detail, to be grateful for help that has been provided to you. And that's an interesting discussion to have. And we'll come back to that, but keep that sort of thing in mind. We're doing the same thing here that we did with the philosophic calculus. Okay, now this one's actually quite interesting. Some duties rest on the fact or possibility of a distribution of pleasure or happiness, or of the means thereto, which is not in accordance with the merit of the persons concerned. In such cases, there arises a duty to upset or prevent such a distribution. So, let's think about what exactly he's saying here, because this is probably the one that is worded the most difficultly here. The fact or possibility of a distribution of pleasure or happiness, or of the means thereto, which is not in accordance with the merit of the persons concerned. In such cases, there arises a duty to upset or prevent such a distribution. He calls this justice. So justice, of course, being important, it's probably worth taking a minute to understand exactly what he's talking about here. He's saying, and think about this on your own for a second, but what he's saying really is there are situations, there are facts about the world where certain people have pleasure, happiness, distribution of pleasure and happiness, such that their actions, their merits don't really warrant such a distribution. Now, this is interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, he's talking about pleasure and happiness, and that sounds very much like a consequentialist utilitarian sort of thing to be discussing. But he's also talking about the distribution of that stuff, not just some kind of total overall number. He's talking about the distribution of that happiness or pleasure and the means thereto. So, I mean, you've all run into this before, I'm sure. There are those who, well, are kind of assholes. There are people who are just basically assholes. And those people sometimes have everything, it seems, right? Things just work out for them. It doesn't seem like they have to work for stuff. It just kind of falls in their laps. It's like they're born with a silver spoon in their mouths, and it just always seems to work out. And no matter what level of assholery they get up to, they just seem to always come out shining on the other end. And then, of course, on the flip side, you have people who work really hard, people who try really hard, people who endeavor to be good, fine, upstanding, moral, helpful, honest citizens, and so on, and yet it just doesn't work out. Just for whatever reason, certain circumstances, just bad luck sometimes, just, you know, chance events, things just don't work out. So, or they're prevented from having, you know, their just desserts, as it were, by those people who are in power sometimes. In other words, we see all sorts of examples of unfairness, right? We see all kinds of different examples of situations that are not fair. And basically what this duty, this prima facie duty here is saying is we have a duty, a prima facie duty, to upset or prevent that unfair distribution. He's talking about merit. Certain people, because of their merits, because of their efforts, because of their work, deserve certain levels of pleasure and happiness. And certain others, because of their lack of merit, deserve lower levels of pleasure and happiness. And we have a duty to try to make things as fair as we can. Now notice, this is important. Justice here for Ross doesn't mean equal right? That's why he's talking about merit. Just doesn't mean equal. It means fair. Fair doesn't mean equal, right? Fair doesn't just mean everyone should have equal whatever resources. That wouldn't be fair. If everyone just had the same, that wouldn't be fair. The person who works really hard should have more than the person who's lazy. That's not the way it works out, and that's unfair. That's not fair. So fair doesn't mean equal, right? That's important. So we have a duty, a prima facie duty, to try to prevent these injustices and this unfairness. And of course, also, that means by proxy to try to help that justice come about and arise. Okay, that's an important one that should be further discussed as well. Okay. Now, some of these duties rest on the mere fact that there are beings in the world whose condition we can make better in respect of virtue, intelligence, or pleasure. These are the duties of beneficence. Beneficence is about helping others. There is this underlying moral weight to helping those whom you can help. Right? Go back to walking along and seeing the small child drowning in the small pond. You have the ability to help such a person, even if it's not your fault that person is there, that baby is there, that child is there, even if it's not due to your own negligence or whatever, you still have a duty, a prima facie duty, to go and help and save that kid. Beneficence is about helping others. Now, I'm going to move down to 6 because it goes a little bit better with 4 than it does to 5. I think we should distinguish from 4, which was beneficence, the duties that can be summed up under the title of not injuring others. No doubt to injure is incidentally to fail to do them good, but it seems clear to me that a non-maleficence duty is apprehended as distinct from that of beneficence. It is a duty of a more stringent character. So we have in 4, beneficence, that is, help others, and we have in 6, non-maleficence. And as he says, look, I recognize that if I do injure someone, right, then I am automatically not helping them, right? But I think there is a separate duty that we should express called non-maleficence. So again, I want you to think about this. Is this necessary? Ross thinks it is. Is it necessary to separate beneficence and non-maleficence? I mean, if we say we should help people, why do we also need to say we shouldn't hurt people? Because if we have a duty to help people, doesn't that automatically mean you shouldn't hurt them? So think about that. We will come back to that and discuss that particular issue here as well. And then finally, we'll come to the last one, which is 5. I skipped over it. Some rest on the fact that we can improve our own condition in respect of virtue, intelligence, etc. These are the duties of self-improvement. Now, that completes Ross's list of prima facie duties. Fidelity, reparation, gratitude, justice, beneficence, non-maleficence, and self-improvement. Now, we need to discuss these 7 to see if you think that all 7 of these belong, as we did with the philosophic calculus. But we need to understand exactly what's going on here with these prima facie duties. Basically, as Ross is suggesting here, a prima facie duty is this duty that's conditional. And remember, Ross is setting up these different prima facie duties as a way to suggest that there might be duties that conflict, right? I mean, that's one of his main goals here. When we're thinking about the Kantian categorical imperative And we come to this conclusion that Kant is not going to allow any violation of the duty, then we run into this problem where we have multiple duties that conflict with one another, and we have literally no way of figuring out which one we should do. At which point Kant says, you figured it wrong, go back to the drawing board and apply the categorical imperative again, because you've screwed up. Well, here we have Ross not trying to say duties won't conflict. We have Ross embracing the fact that duties conflict. And what Ross wants to say is, what we need to do is figure out how to deal with this. So the prima facie duties are not categorically incumbent upon you. The prima facie duties are conditional. You have a duty to reparation, right? Unless there is some greater prima facie duty that is heavier or more weighty or more important in this situation. If you come across a situation where these duties conflict, multiple of these duties conflict, you have to make a choice. You have to figure out which of these duties is, in this particular situation, the most important one. So, that, of course, is a discussion that we'll have. But, at this point, we need to understand the prima facie duties themselves a little bit more clearly. First of all, we need to ask ourselves, do all seven of these duties belong on the list? All right? That's the first thing we need to ask. Is it actually true? Is it actually true that we need to separate beneficence and non-maleficence? Could we just get rid of non-maleficence and just get away with beneficence? Is it actually true that we have a duty to gratitude? Is it actually true that we have a duty to self-improvement? Is it actually true that we have a duty to reparation? Is it actually true that we have a duty to justice? Are these things actually prima facie duties? Now, what I mean by that question, remember, prima facie duties, as Ross suggests, are not duties proper. What it means to say it's a prima facie duty is to say that there is moral weight to it. There's a moral consideration to be made. Now, we have to understand which one weighs the most morally in a given situation, but all of the prima facie duties have moral weight. How do we know this? How do we know? How does Ross claim that we know these things are self-evident, or prima facie duties? Well, I just sort of let it slip. They're self-evident. That's what Ross is suggesting here, is that they are self-evident. These duties, prima facie duties, are self-evident. In other words, you know, you ought to know immediately and self-evidently that the making of a promise includes the moral weight to keep that promise. There is no other reason why you should keep the promise other than that it is a promise. If you understand what a promise is, you automatically understand that there's moral weight to keeping that promise. That's what he's talking about here with prima facie duties. The simple fact that you know what a promise is, the simple fact that you have made a promise, automatically means that you recognize that that promise, keeping that promise, matters morally. So, we need to talk about this list of prima facie duties. What do you think of this list? Do you think he's right that all seven of these belong as prima facie duties? Do you think he's right that they're self-evident, that they belong on the list is self-evident? If you think you want to get rid, if you think you want to reject some of these seven, do you think that the remaining ones that you do think belong on the list are self-evident? What do you think of Ross's attempt so far?